This episode of Forecast is brought to you by Carbonite, the leader in online backup. Backup your PC or Mac offsite securely and automatically for a free trial offer plus 2 free months with purchase. Go to carbonite.com. Use the code CAST.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 33. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Scott Johnson.
And we are joined once again for the second of three episodes with our lovely wives. Welcome, everybody.
Hello.
Hello, Kim.
Hello.
She's directing my son out of the room.
Yeah. if you haven't listened to the previous episode, Kim Johnson, wife of Scott Johnson, and Eileen Rivera, wife of Tom Merritt Rivera.
Good to be back.
You're really going to change your name.
Just change my name.
Yeah, I know.
Kim had a cool. She had a really cool maiden name. It was Soans, like Jones with an S.
Ooh. Yeah.
You should have taken that, Scott.
You're Mrs. Saunez.
I'm like, really? Yeah. You've never seen Jones before? Come on.
Scott. So her name was Soanez.
Yeah. Oh, I hadn't even thought about that. Holy crap! We could use that. That's the geekiest thing I've ever heard. Nice catch, Tom. 17 years later. Burn.
All right. Well, this is our long-term prediction episode. And so we've got a long-term prediction episode from Chris, who emailed us. He says, I think that within 50 to 100 years, probably earlier than later, the world will see the first fully robotic, artificially intelligent band. This band will not only have communication between the members to create music, but they will also perform the music. Although this would take away from the talent base in music, I hope I live long enough to watch Pink Droid playing Dark Side of the Moon on the actual Dark Side of the Moon. Awesome show. Keep up the good work.
Oh.
That's my favorite email we've ever gotten. I'm not going to lie about it.
I thought we already had a robotic band. They're called the Rolling Stones.
Oh, sorry.
Keith Richards is not a robot. He's just inhuman. He's undead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot that he's a vampire. Jeez.
That's right.
He's a spindly piece of leather with artificial intelligence is what that guy is.
I'm sorry, everybody. I got my robots and undead mixed up.
First of all, well done with the Pink Droid Dark Side of the Moon.
That was
pretty
awesome.
From the actual Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah, that's great.
But what do you guys think about, you know, artificial bands? We've talked on this show about artificial sports players before, but never musicians, I don't think.
This kind of goes down the line of what I believe about Futurama predicting most of the future. Futurama often featured bands that were almost entirely robotic, and then few exceptions. One of the members, like they had an episode with Beck on it, and Beck was the only human, but it was just Beck's head. And everything else was robots, which is, you know, always a joy. But yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of a band now, or the one that we're sort of into, that would be a good robot band.
Daft Punk.
Yeah, and I'm not thinking, I mean, I think it's quite easy to say, even in the shorter term, that we'll see electronically created music. We're already seeing a lot of that.
Yeah, there's already digitally, you know, created tracks behind one person singing.
And Microsoft has that technology that you just hum a tune and it creates all the background tracks. Yeah. Is that what you're talking? Yeah.
Like Gorillaz, that's one dude
who's
super smart with all the stuff he does, and he's so good at everything that he's actually created this fake pseudo band that I guess you could call them robotic. They're a cartoon, and supposedly that's Gorillaz, but it's just a dude.
Maybe he's a robot.
Yeah, and that stuff's amazing. I love those. I love that stuff. So, yeah, I love it. Plastic Beach, great album. Everyone should get it.
I remember when. All right, it's time for the long-term predictions from our guests. These are long-term sci-fi, weird, strange, turn your world upside down sorts of predictions for the next 50 to 100 years-ish. We're pretty loose on that, but just looking a little longer down the road than we looked last episode. Let's start with you, Mrs. Johnson.
Oh, hello.
Oh, hello, honey. What do you got there?
All right. Mine was food replicators. I think we'll be able to start seeing food generated for us that will have the same...
Star Trek style.
It's true. It'll have the same things that, you know, that we need, all of the nutrients, things like that, but it'll be created by someone, something else.
So can I ask you a question? Because you're in our marriage, a keynote of our marriage... A keystone, The keynote would be a presentation.
The keynote at our marriage was given by.
Had many slides.
At the reception.
Yeah. I think the cornerstones is what I meant to say of our marriage is your cooking. So you cook almost everything. Nerdtacular 2010 featured Kim cooking for 70 people. That's true. What you do. Like, that's one of your passions. You make really good food. She comes from the South. She's from Mississippi. So her Southern food recipes are beyond, reproach. Is that the word?
I can attest that your food is awesome.
Oh, thank you.
That's nice of you to say. So she cooks nutritious, really good food. How do you feel about being replaced by a bunch of robots and machines?
I can see me putting my feet up and reading a good book. I could send me one. Yeah. She could tell me which one I can start with.
You would cook when you want instead of every day.
I enjoy cooking. Yeah. I really do. I enjoy putting it together. I enjoy new recipes, things like that. But I can totally see not having to do that.
But whatever example that we have, and Tom, maybe you can think of one, of technology that has taken over an analog equivalent that we maybe either used to enjoy or used to be a necessity but doesn't really
washing machine
anymore. What was it?
Laundry.
Oh, yeah, laundry machine. Good point.
Because instead of having to haul all your clothes down to the river with the washboard and the lye soap, you know, you can just throw it in this machine and then you run back upstairs and then you whine, oh, I have to walk back downstairs and haul it out of the machine instead of going down to the river with the bucket and the washboard.
But the thing is, back then, you couldn't have said that was something people had a lot of passion for. Like, that was not oh my gosh, I can't wait for Thursday. Why?
We don't have the laundry.
Going to the river with my clothes.
We don't have the laundry
channel.
That's not
the way they think anymore. They think now, they think about it being a mundane task then, and now we just think of it's still mundane.
It's still being a mundane task.
Yeah, but it's a lot less work for you. But cooking, you really like it. Or am I wrong? You've just been telling me that all these years?
No, I really do.
Okay.
She just can't stand your cooking.
But I'm also not cooking over an open fire.
Yeah, that's true.
I've got,
you have conveniences.
Yeah, stove and the oven and all of that. So, I don't know.
Do you think
that happens to cooking shows, though? Replicators come? Food Network goes off the air?
Then maybe they're even better cooking shows because it's very intricate, very only the things you really want to do. It's like you said. Then I do the things I enjoy cooking.
Iron Chef, they could literally be made of iron.
Yes, Iron Chef.
Nice.
Iron Chefs.
I long for the day to say, tea, hot, Earl Grey. And then hot. It just happens. I love that.
Well, the thing about cooking is, I think you're right. We don't have the laundry channel where people show all the different ways to do your laundry and make it awesome. It's different with cooking because there's cooking because you have to cook and there's cooking because you want to cook. And I don't think cooking because you want to cook ever goes away. You see these people on the Food Channel doing techniques that are totally unnecessary when they could totally microwave something or use some kind of technology, and they don't. They're like, no, you pull out the old-fashioned iron skillet because it tastes better that way. And I don't think that ever goes away. I think replicators will give you a certain kind of food, but I don't know. It's a good question. Can they actually recreate all of the molecular bonds and chemical changes that need to happen that give you that, gourmet taste to something?
Well, we're already going to 30-minute meals. I think eventually we will just not have the minutes. We will be able to snap our fingers and get that food. I mean, people are moving towards faster, more. Not that this is going to be unhealthy, but, I think it's a possibility.
Maybe Kim's prediction works like this. It's an interim solution to the issue of obesity in this country and other parts of the world and fast food and the problem all of that presents. So if we get something that's that convenient and that quick for the quickness that we need, it's in the dash of our car, it's in the kitchen, it's wherever it is, and it can poop out food that is better for us, leaner, more nutritious, whatever, than a Big Mac meal, supersized or whatever, then that seems like a decent middle ground. That still solves the I need things quick. She can still on the weekend go crazy and make homemade jambalaya or something.
Right. It takes away the mundane task of 5 o'clock going, oh, crap, what's for dinner?
Yeah, the kids all have sports or this stuff's going on.
Right.
So it's interesting coming from kind of a domestic standpoint because, we have three kids and they're being pulled in 100 different ways as they get older with school and activities and everything else, that I've noticed it's harder. We make a goal every day of eating together. It's just something we do, but it's getting harder.
Yeah.
So wouldn't it be nice if you had a machine that would just go, all right, well, we only have 10 minutes to be together. We would like a pepperoni pizza, please.
Right.
Steak,
yeah.
Well done, hot.
Right.
Side of green beans.
Forget Earl Grey.
Blanched and steamed.
Earl Grey rubbed steak.
I wonder what Jamie Oliver would think about this, with this whole food revolution. I think the key is healthy. The key is like replicating, natural foods and eating those foods.
But they're not natural if you're
replicating. Well, you know what I mean. That's what I said, replicating.
Yeah, but then they're synthetic. Is Jamie Oliver, I mean, that's your question.
That's my question. I wonder if he's
still going to be okay with that if it's like, that's not actually natural.
Yeah. If they're literally taking the molecular atomic patterns of what makes food food, and they're somehow pulling that out of the ether, I mean, isn't that what food is anyway?
Ether?
Yeah.
Well, not not ether.
I don't know how you guys eat in Utah, but we don't put ether in our food.
It's really good, but you know what I mean. Like, if there's a way to truly replicate the natural process of what food becomes. That's different to me. But then, I mean, you have things like aging and you have things like meat curing and the effect of spices on things that take time.
And
can a machine do that?
Undercooking, overcooking, resting the meat, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Well, maybe that's where the mundane stuff. It's like, I need my pasta cooked. And then you can throw it all together with all the seasoning you like.
Yeah, see?
Just your plain pasta.
Baby steps.
Baby steps.
Yeah, we don't need Thanksgiving Day to have a machine poop out a turkey. But we maybe
please don't poop out a turkey.
Prepare the turkey and do some other things to it and put it in this machine. And maybe the machine knocks it out in 5 seconds. But
or
you still
even
had to
5 minutes would be great.
That'd be great too, wouldn't it?
I'm thinking the machine makes a decent bowl of spaghetti. It makes a decent sliced turkey dinner. But it's never going to be outstanding because you're just not going to be able to replicate, literally, that process. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, when we live in space, because we had to leave the Earth due to 2012, we're going to need these, the replicators. The food
replicators will be all we have.
Yes. To remember the food that we once had on the beloved Earth that we destroyed.
All right. On that note of taking Kim's absolutely wonderfully positive vision and bringing it back to her, to a destroyed Earth.
Theme. It's like Kim is really positive, yeah. And then Eileen's
You're
like
not really that negative.
No, I don't think so.
Let's take a break just to tell people that this episode is brought to you by Carbonite, the leader in online backup. Because when the Earth is destroyed, you'll want to have a backup. A few things to know about Carbonite. It takes all your data, your files, your photos, your email, your financial records, anything. It's agnostic. It'll take whatever you want. And the best part is you don't have to add any hardware or cables. It just does it over the internet. So it can continuously back up your files at carbonite.com where you can access them. You can then recover lost files, restore previous versions of files, or transfer files from one computer to another. Your files are encrypted, so you don't have to worry about that. You get unlimited backup for less than $5 a month, $55 a year. Why not go try it out for free? Go to carbonite.com and enter the offer code CAST. And if you decide to buy the service after the trial, so go to the site, enter the code CAST, and then after the trial, you can sign up and you'll get 2 months free with that CAST offer code. Be sure to sign up for the free trial from the homepage if you want to get the 2 months free. But you don't need a credit card, so go check it out, carbonite.com. All right, Ms. Rivera, we move to you.
With all of my research.
You have done so much to prepare. What is your long-term prediction?
Well, my long-term prediction actually piggybacks off of Kim's long-term and short-term. So speaking of Star Trek and then speaking of paperless, I'm going to go with, which I think some people are going to think qualifies as crazy prediction, but I'm just going to go as long-term, is that maybe, possibly, in the 24th century, a la Star Trek, that we will not need money anymore, and humans will have advanced beyond the drive for material wealth and possessions should we survive 2012. There we go.
Wow.
Wow. So we won't even go buy our dinners because we won't need to.
No. I don't know how it's going to work. It's some bartering system or whatever. I have no idea. Yeah, we're not going to, we're not going to need money, and there will be no, that kind of greed won't be there anymore in the world. I would like to, this is my hopeful prediction for the future. And I know that there's been, you know, what is it, Cambodia that tried it, failed. But I don't know. I still think.
Several resorts like Sandals, I think, are cashless.
At least Sandals. Make you feel that way. Let me ask you this question. So I remember being super disappointed at the end of the Next Generation of Star Trek because when Deep Space Nine started, suddenly there was a part of Starfleet where money still mattered. All this time they were like, we don't need money here. You know, it seemed like this great utopian future. And then all of a sudden you got Ferengis swapping gold-pressed latinum for everything. And I just remember thinking, oh, you guys are going back the other way. Who's this Ronald Moore and what's he doing with my Star Trek?
You know what? I didn't really watch Deep Space Nine. Tom introduced me to Next Generation and we watched Voyager and Enterprise, but for whatever reason we skipped. And I'm a big fan of the original Star Trek. For whatever reason we kind of skipped. And maybe you thought that I didn't really like Deep Space Nine. So maybe that's part of why I didn't like Deep Space Nine.
I was just trying to get you to watch something, so I didn't want to push too much on you at once.
So maybe that's why I didn't like Deep Space Nine. There was some kind of philosophical change in that series, a la what you're saying, Scott, the money. I just probably kind of read too early and I thought,
yeah, it got a little dark in there. Got a little negative. It got a little sort of different. It was very much a Ronald Moore production. He was in charge of that particular spinoff. And while he did great things with BSG, the guy's a negative Nilly. I mean, everything he does is like, everything's terrible. And that's our show. And that's okay. I think that works for good TV just as much as something optimistic and some would say wildly optimistic like Star Trek. But I remember that just took me off the path and I thought, well, I don't want to be in a future where greed is still a factor because my personal opinion is greed is the problem with everything.
Yeah.
Rick Berman, Brandon Braga, and Ronald Moore were all working for Gene Roddenberry and he laid down strict rules that you couldn't have any conflict in Star Trek with the humans. The humans had solved all their problems, and that's why they didn't have money.
Mm-hmm.
And so with Deep Space Nine, it was their chance to say, we're not in the Federation anymore. We're out in the wild, in the frontier, and we're with this other race, the Bajorans. And so they created this system where they could have the old-fashioned and not be pushed to make these stories have conflict from elsewhere. They could fall back on the old fashioned, like, oh, everybody's greedy and hates each other and good old fashioned human values.
Plus, I think Roddenberry was pretty close to dying at the early part of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah,
so I feel like this is terrible. But maybe afterwards. he shoved off to a different galaxy and all this and all right, it's go time, we can do whatever we want here. And I kind of sensed Voyager kind of brought the positive back, but I felt like that kind of, like even in Enterprise again, just started getting a little negative again. And I don't know why we're talking about Star Trek. Where did this come from?
Well, that was because it came from my prediction.
Well, the cashless society. The idea that there is they've conquered all resource scarcity.
Right.
So with replicators, like you're talking about, Kim, and several other technologies, there's no need to have money.
See, I love how we didn't talk, Kim, but we're on the same wavelength, aren't we?
We are.
It's just a hopeful prediction. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't think I'm going to be alive to see that, but I would like to hope. I would like to think that the human race will get over itself and, you know, like you said, solve all its problems and, you know, just kind of forge into a better future.
So true. I love it.
Yeah, I like your prediction.
I like that prediction a lot.
Money is so money is such the root of a lot of evil in a lot of ways.
And how biblical of you!
Now I'm getting all religious on everybody.
No, it's true. I think you're probably right. That theme runs through lots of religions and philosophies and through just common sense. You know, money is just a big old pain in the butt.
Yeah,
love of money.
There's religion, and then there's classism. You know, with money and who has the most money and who doesn't have any money. Poor versus rich versus middle class, and it's really unfortunate.
Well, the thing about money, though, the purpose it serves is I won't take advantage of you. It's a transactional scorekeeping, right? So if we get rid of money, how do we make sure, you know, what is the system that makes sure that you're not taking advantage of all of my efforts, you know, and just living off my back? Because that's actually the complaint people have about money, is that all these rich people who have all this money live off of all the rest of us. Mm-hmm. But the defense is, well, they worked hard to get that money. I mean, let's forget about inheritances and right. lotteries and all that sort of thing. You know, the idea is supposed to be you work to get your money, and so then you can do what you want with it. But how do we get around that idea of, like, I've done all this work and now I have no credit because there is no money?
Well, if you can wipe out all the political issues that this all brings up, mm-hmm. For a minute, and just look at it from a raw, you know, not communist versus, you know,
right.
whatever other ideology that somebody might slap on this, and just forget about all that for a minute and just think about what it would take to get to be a moneyless society. It doesn't mean a resourceless, you know, foodless, waterless society. It means that we'd literally right. have to share all that crap.
Everyone would have their own job. Everyone have their own part in
their position in it somehow. Mm-hmm. And it would not be about, oh my gosh, my job is killing me, I can't wait till payday. It then becomes, oh, my job is cool because I'm discovering new planets and I'm, you know, we only have Star Trek to go by. But what Star Trek doesn't teach us or doesn't tell us about is all that middle ground where people had to get to that point. Like, how did they transition from tons of people hate their job, or half of these people don't speak English, mm-hmm. and all, you know, somebody needs to go back into the Star Trek canon.
You need the Star Trek Bible.
I want to know what they did, because I think there's no answer. I don't know that there's a way.
I don't know that there's a stopping point to get everyone to change.
Well, yeah, there's no central moment, a zeitgeist moment that right. says,
that converts everyone.
Well, maybe right. there is. I'm saying we don't know. I don't know that we're capable of knowing what that is.
Because you always have a slacker around.
Always.
You always have that one guy who's ruining it for everybody. Or maybe yeah. it's a woman. I don't know. And that guy is just, you know, he's like, well, wait a minute. We could all just do our jobs and it'd be fine. But then, you know, Joe Blow over there isn't doing anything.
Yeah. And then you say, well, then what motivates people to work or motivates people to grow and expand? And right now, oftentimes it is money. For some, it's a passion for what it is they're doing. But often, but then we get into a situation where we're all beholden to a system that where we need money from it to survive, because mm-hmm. we have set it all up that way. And how do you get away from that? So I want Eileen's future so bad. I just don't know where they bridge it. It's such a hard gap to bridge.
Yeah. Well, the first thing is to get rid of scarcity. And so we're actually moving the other way with food right now. But eventually, I think we will solve a lot of those problems. The next thing, and I think maybe moving money into a digital form helps this, is to get rid of imbalance, so mm-hmm. that it becomes moot how much money you have. Because everybody has what they need, and then all of a sudden money becomes meaningless. I think that's the only way that this happens naturally. And the only analog I can think of off the top of my head is peering relationships on internet backbones. Because the way they work is the big backbone operators have to send traffic to and from each other, or else we wouldn't have an internet. And they're dealing in massive and massive amounts of data. And so they have peering relationships that basically say, hey, you send me a massive amount of data, I'm going to send you a massive amount of data, and we're just going to call it even. We're not going to charge each other for it.
It's a common good approach that is difficult to find those kinds of things where it makes the most sense. That made perfect sense. And if anything, we're raising a digital age of people that are maybe a little bit more prone to this idea
and
of
sharing.
Share and share alike.
Yeah, exactly.
Not calling it communism, not calling it anything else, not even calling it capitalism, but just saying, you know, there's some value in this software I'm writing to be open source.
Yeah.
I don't want to hog it. I want the world to benefit from it. And that spirit is probably, because it's an entrepreneurial spirit. It's a shared knowledge spirit. It's not a religious or ideological spirit. It's a more practical rubber meets the road kind of spirit. And those kinds of things push us toward Eileen's utopian ideal.
Mm-hmm. It's in the future is in the kids.
Think of the children. Are our future.
Think of the children. Yeah,
let them lead the way.
The children of light.
Children.
The children of light. That was the Salt Lake Olympics.
I know it was. Do you guys remember that the opening ceremonies, the children of light? And so ever since, every time we see the Olympic ceremonies and we see some kids.
They always
with
have
some,
kids, right?
There's always kids, and they're always holding something.
Like, it's the next year.
We got a lot of kids in Utah. They had to do something with them for the Olympics.
There you go. All right. Thank you, Kim Johnson, for being with us once again.
Thank you.
appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day. Have you remembered your Twitter address yet?
No. We were going to look it up, and I forgot.
Look that up.
Okay, we got another chance. Next right. episode.
That's a tease, folks. You have to listen to the next episode.
To get her Twitter.
You can find Eileen at twitter.com/biggiepaz. That's B-I-G-E-P-A-Z. She produces three shows for Revision 3, but also does her own shows, Bite Club at biteclubshow.com, and the new Geeks on Glee.
Geeksonglee.com. We've started one episode. We'll have more. We're getting better. But it's fun because we love that show.
You can keep up with Scott Johnson by finding him jogging somewhere south of Salt Lake, or just following him on Twitter at twitter.com/extralife.
Yeah, I happen to be well-informed and in the know that Mr. Tom Merritt can be found at Ace Detect on Twitter. That's twitter.com/Ace, the letter D, Tect. T-E-C-T.
And don't forget to leave comments at our website, forecastpodcast.com, or send us an email to forecastpodcast@gmail.com. For Kim Johnson, Eileen Rivera, and Scott Johnson, I'm Tom Merritt. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
But it's only 32 years away.